Hello, everybody. Hello. Good to be here, right? First Samuel 16 is where we're going to be tonight. Hope that you've had a good day. We have. Thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been a very encouraging day. Try your best to be encouraging to some of our brethren that are struggling right now. You know, Danny Dotson buried his oldest sister today and has been in Tennessee all day. Y'all reach out to him if you hadn't already and let him know that you love him and thinking about him. And you probably have. I know that you're good about doing that. And a lot of you send cards and calls. And we also have Donna Christopher and that family that has lost a loved one. She lost her father-in-law. And so remember them also. Reach out to them. Emily's, of course, last week as well. If you had not, and I noticed a whole lot of people signed up for pictures. Thank you so much for that. We are starting a little early to try to get everybody on there, but if you hadn't done that, I'm just going to keep on repeating that for an entire month until we want everybody in our directory, so y'all make sure that you sign up for that. Of course, Michael was an encouragement this morning, rededicating his life, and most of you, I guess, know him. Some of you, Henry was reminiscing about having him even as a kid, as a youth in class and everything, and so it's so good to have him back. So y'all reach out to him as well. Let me see if this thing is going to work. All right. We are looking at great lessons from Old Testament greats, and I think I'm probably going to do at least 8 of these. We might do more than that. There's so many to look at, and honestly, I love series for a number of reasons. I can sink my teeth into it and really dive in. I like knowing what, like, if I'm listening to a series, I enjoy it because I know what to expect and I look forward to it. If I'm doing a series, I look forward to it because I know what I'm doing. And it's not every single week thinking, okay, what do we need? You know, what do I need to preach? And so I enjoy this, doing different series, and I really enjoy looking at the different characters throughout the Word of God. And so we're looking at great lessons from Old Testament greats. It doesn't get much greater than David, right? A man after God's own heart. He's one of the greatest, of course, and we could talk about so many different things when it comes to David. He was a poet, and I would say among the very best. In fact, he is the most read and most quoted poet of all times. Did you know that? Not only, it's probably no surprise to you, and of course, he is also a prophet. And so some of the prophecies in the poetry, of course, throughout the book of Psalms, he was a messianic prophet, of course, prophesying about the Messiah a lot. And Psalm 22, of course, is the main one that we are aware of, that we're familiar with. So he did those things. He was also, of course, the giant killer. He was referred to, actually, and he's referred to and he is quoted more in the New Testament than anybody else in all the Bible. And that's probably not a surprise either. So I want to read you a little bit of an introductory from this guy. There is a book written by Jim Jordan. He is entitled it, David, the Life and the Psalms. Listen to this. It says, here is some of the introduction to the life of David. He goes on, he says, the first verse of the New Testament reads, the book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, Matthew 1 and verse 1. Jesus was born in the city of David, was called the root of David, the seed of David, and was given the throne of David. The New Testament closes, I, Jesus, have sent my angel to testify to you these things in the churches. I am the root and the offspring of David, the bright and morning star. That's Revelation 22 and verse 16. In the middle of the New Testament, Paul, in introducing Jesus to them, went back to God's word concerning David. I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, which shall fulfill all of my will of this man's seed, having God, according to his promise, raised unto Israel a Savior, David. So that was that man's introductory to that book, just kind of revealing how valuable David is and what a great man he is. What made David great? You know, what makes people great? Was he born great? I don't think so. Well, some people are born great, but most are not, unless you're royalty, I guess. A story was told, and no, this is not a true story, I don't guess, about a guy that lived in a tourist town. And so he had a lot of people that would come, tourists that would come and look at all the sites and everything. And he was an older fella, and so he was retired. So he'd sit on the front porch and enjoy sipping his coffee and watch all the tourists, you know, and get a kick out of watching that. And so he's watching some tourists one day, and they were going and looking at the sites and everything, and looked at the older gentleman on the porch and just asked him, "Hey, was there anybody famous born here?" And the old guy just kind of smiled and said, "No, only babies." Most people are not born famous. They do something in their life. And like I said, unless it's royalty. And so David, you know, he hit the top. He was the king of the most powerful nation in the world and God's people. And the question is, how did he get there? He wasn't born into it. So maybe it was a great father, or maybe it was great siblings. Well, I think as we go through the study that you'll see that it was definitely not that. I don't know if y'all ever do this, but sometimes in the people that stand out in the Bible so much, I would love to just be able to, almost like a talk show, to sit down and question them and just have a conversation, you know, and ask them about different things in their life. Have y'all ever done that? Have you ever thought about that as you read the Bible? Wouldn't you like to ask them questions about their life? So what would we ask David? If you had David and you could just have him there for an hour or so and you're asking him, what would you ask him about? Would you ask him about his battles? You know, he was a great warrior. He was a shepherd, of course. Would you ask him about that? Most of us probably ask about his battles, and we know why he was a warrior, because of God, of course. Would you ask him about that? Would you ask him about his kingship? Because he was the king over the most powerful nation. Would you ask him about Israel? Did you know that Israel flourished more in that time, really, than any other time? There's a lot of different things that we could ask David about, and there's so many different lessons. I would like sometime to do a series on just David, and we could do 2 or 3 months at least, and just looking at different things, the highlights of David. But I wonder, you know, all the different things we could talk about, what we're going to talk about is how David didn't let anybody get him down. David had a lot of people in his life that did not believe in him, that discouraged him, that did not see potential in him, and yet he became a great man. So that's what I hope you have a Bible tonight. We're going to read a lot of scriptures. I like treating Sunday night more like a Bible study. 1 Samuel chapter 6, looking at 4 people that tried to limit David, that did not see potential in David. And so the first one is his own father, Jesse. 1 Samuel chapter 16. 1 Samuel 16, beginning there at verse 1. "Now the Lord said to Samuel, 'How long will you mourn for Saul, seeing that I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go, and I am sending you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided myself a king among his sons.' And Samuel said, 'How can I go? If Saul hears it, he will kill me.' But the Lord said, 'Take a heifer with you and say, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Then invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do, and you shall anoint for me the one I name to you.'" So God's going to guide him, obviously. Verse 4, "So Samuel did what the Lord said and went to Bethlehem, and the elders of the town trembled at his coming and said, 'Do you come in peaceably?'" You can just imagine, you know, they're wondering, this is God's man. And he said, "Peaceably, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." Then he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. Verse 6, "So it was when they came that he looked at Eliab and said, 'Surely the Lord's anointed is before him.'" Now we're going to skip verse 7, very well-known verse. We'll come back to it later. Skip verse 7, going down to verse 8. "So Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. And he said, 'Neither has the Lord chosen this one.' Then Jesse made Shammah pass by. And he said, 'Neither has the Lord chosen this one.' Thus Jesse made 7 of his sons pass before Samuel, and Samuel said to Jesse, 'The Lord has not chosen these.'" Now, think about this. There's different standpoints you could look at this. Take this from a father's standpoint. Now, if you are a father, I want you to imagine that God's man, God's prophet, is coming to your house, and he's not just coming to visit, and he's not just coming to maybe find a king. He is coming to your house because for sure someone, one of your sons, is going to be the next king. How would you feel, fathers? Proud, exactly. You'd be proud. You'd be excited about it. So how would you feel if you weren't invited to that? And so you know that they would be excited. Now, Jesse and Samuel are thinking pretty much the same thing. They're looking at the outward appearance. They're looking at Eliab, the oldest. He was a known warrior. He was one of Saul's greatest warriors. He was, I'm sure, a very stocky guy, and he was warlike and everything. And so they're looking at him. Verse 6, notice that. They looked at Eliab and said, "Surely the Lord's anointed is before him." And so they go down through there and look at all the different ones that are warlike. They're manly men, you know. They're big guys, and yet he's rejecting every single one of these. Well, here's the question. Why in the world was David not invited? You know, would that hurt your feelings? I'll just be honest with you. That downright hurt my feelings. If I knew, and I don't know if David knew, and maybe he didn't know, but if I knew that Samuel was coming, the prophet of God was coming to my house and going to choose between me and my brothers, and my dad didn't even bother. Now, he got all the others ready, and if you will, it says that they passed before him. He was showing them off. It was like a showcase, you know. He's got them all done up, you know, and probably, I don't know what they would have been wearing, but they're passing before Jesse, or not before Jesse, but before Samuel. And you're not even invited. So just imagine what that must have been like. So does that give you an idea about the father Jesse and how he felt about his own son, David? He didn't believe in him, did he? There's no way it could be the runt. He's the youngest out of eight. He's a little shepherd boy. And as we continue to read, you'll see that he was very handsome and probably, I don't know if he'd been smooth skinned or not. I wouldn't think so being a shepherd, but he was very small and he was very handsome. And so he didn't even invite him. So go to verse 7 and then we'll pick up at verse 11. Verse 7 we know very well. The Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at his heart." What a lesson. We all know that passage very well. And yet, do we do that? I do that sometimes. I don't even think about it. We look at the color of somebody's skin. We look at someone based on sometimes their economic situation, sometimes on their education, how educated they are, their credentials, their job. And we tend to look at people on those terms and not look at the heart. And so certainly there's a lesson in that for us. Now let's pick up in verse 11. Verse 11, "And Samuel said to Jesse, 'Are all the young men here?' And then he said, 'There remains yet the youngest, and behold, he is keeping the sheep.' And Samuel said to Jesse, 'Well, send and bring him, for we will not sit down till he comes here.' So he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy, reddish complexion, you know, and probably from being out in the sun a lot, with bright eyes and good looking. And the Lord said, 'Arise and anoint him, for this is the one.' Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel rose and went to Ramah." So as we think about David and the great success he was, he had lots of people in his life that did not contribute to that he had to overcome all of those things to be who he ended up being. And so the very first one is his father. His own father did not believe in him, so much so that he did not even invite him, because he thought, there's no way that my youngest could ever be king. And so we could say it like this, that Jesse, his father, did not think that his son David had king potential. There's no king potential there. Now let's look at the second one. That's David's brothers. And so 1 Samuel chapter 17, and we're going to start with verse 12. Now, David was the son of that Ephrathite. Is that how you pronounce that, Henry? I struggle with names sometimes. Of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and who had 8 sons, and the man was old, advanced in the years of Saul. Hope y'all are reading along. We're going to read a lot. Verse 13, the 3 oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to the battle, and the names of the 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next to him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. These are the ones that passed before him, along with the others as well, but verse 14, David was the youngest, and the 3 oldest followed Saul. But David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. Then Jesse said to his son David, take now to your brothers an ephod of this dried grain and these 10 loaves, and run to your brothers at the camp, and carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their 1,000. And see how your brothers fare, and bring back news of them. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. Verse 20. So David rose early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, and took the things and went to Jesse, as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the camp as the army was going out to the fight and shouting for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army. And David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers. Then as he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines. And he spoke according to the same words, so David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who had come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel. I'd like that. Wouldn't y'all like that? That sounds sweet. Verse 26, then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine? He's inquiring, you know, tell me that again, and takes away the reproach from Israel. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him in this manner, saying, so shall it be done for the man who kills him. So they told him. Notice verse 28. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David. And he said, why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and your insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. And David said, what have I done now? What have I done now? Is there not a cause? Then he turned from him towards another and said the same thing. So he's looking around saying this, and these people answered him as the first ones did. All right, so he has brothers. And his brothers, he's the youngest, of course, of 8. And they didn't think that he was warrior potential, right? And I love the way they scoff at him. In verse 28 there, as Eliab, Eliab's the oldest. Now, he is not only the oldest, but he is a great warrior. He is one of Saul's greatest warriors. And he's scoffing at him and saying, why did you come down here? What are you doing here? Could you imagine? Hey, David, where did you leave those few sheep out there in the wilderness, you know? He's scoffing at him. He's making fun of him. Do you have siblings, older siblings? Anybody, the baby in here? The baby, the youngest child, okay, the youngest of, okay, several of you. I am too. All right, so did you ever struggle with your siblings, your older siblings, kind of looking down at you? I have just one brother. He is only 3 years older than me, 3 years and a month older than me, but that month counts, I guess. So, you know, he would say that. But anyway, Scott, it doesn't matter how old we get, okay? It doesn't matter. Scott and I have a good relationship, and we get along just fine, but I'm always in his mind, I'm his little brother. That's it. I'm just his little brother. And there's always, when we're together, there's just kind of that feeling, you know, that I'm just a little brother and he's the great big brother, you know. And so I'm not saying my brother doesn't believe in me at all. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying I think that we can kind of understand this, can we not? We can see where he's coming from. So he didn't get support from his brothers either. He didn't have a supportive group of brothers that said, you can do this. We're behind you. We believe in you. No, what are you doing here? Man, go back and tend to the sheep, you know. All right, so moving on to number three. A fourth one is David's king. And so first of all, David's father didn't believe that he was king potential. Number two, his brothers didn't believe he was warrior potential. But number three, David's king, Saul, did not believe that he was warrior potential either. And so just imagine as if you were in Saul's place and you're ruling a nation and you're at war with the Philistines and things are going pretty good until Goliath comes up. Until this guy comes up, he's defying. And everybody in your army is scared to death. And you're scared to death too. You just don't want to let everybody know that. And so just imagine what it must feel like when all of a sudden you hear, and they're very, very quick, not his brothers, but others are very quick to run and tell Saul that, hey, somebody is saying that they're willing. They're saying, who in the world is this guy that would defy our gods, you know? And imagine what you're thinking. You're thinking, whoo, somebody. I've got somebody that's going to stand up, right? You'd be excited about it. But what would you have in your mind? What kind of person? Yeah, I mean, you'd be thinking about somebody that's broad, somebody tall, someone who has a lot of warrior experience and everything. And so just imagine when you see David. Now let's pick up 17 and verse 31. Now when the words of which David spoke were heard, they were reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. They were so desperate. I find a lot of humor in this. Because David's a little shepherd boy, and all of these great warriors, that they know that they've seen this guy come out with his cheeses and breads and stuff, and he's a little bitty squirt, and all of them got their warrior and stuff on, their armor and stuff on, and they hear David say this, and instead of just laughing it off like his brothers did, they're so scared of the enemy that they run back and tell Saul. That's how desperate they are. They didn't just laugh it off and be like, yeah, whatever. They actually go back and tell Saul because that's how desperate they are. And so, looking at verse 32, then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fall because of him. Your servant will go and fight with the Philistines. Now listen to Saul's response. And I would have done the same thing, I believe. So in verse 33, and Saul said to David, you are not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth. And he a man of war from his youth. Has anybody ever told you you couldn't do something? It might have been that sibling. Anybody said, you can't do that. You can't accomplish that. What did you do? What did that make you want to do? I'll show you, right? I'll show you. I'll give you what for. Oh, I can't do it? Let me show you do it. So notice, I'm sure that's what David's thinking here. And so David begins to talk. Let's skip down, look at verse 40 here. Then he took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself five smooth stones from the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag in a pouch which he had and his sling and was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. So David is about to fight. Wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall of the tent? to hear what all is going on here. So David's king did not believe in him. So that brings us to our fourth and last, and of course you guessed it, the opponent, Goliath, of course did not think very highly of him at all, and he thought it was a joke, and I think we probably would too. All right, 1741. So the Philistine came and began drawing near David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, I love that. He looked about. David's standing there, but he's probably thinking, there's no way that this guy's it. You know, so he's looking around and he sees David. And it says that he disdained him. That means belittled him. He disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good looking. So the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me and I will give you your flesh to the birds of the air and the beast of the field. So you know what happens, of course. And this is after Saul gives David the armor. Do you remember that? And he couldn't even wear the armor. And so David, here he is, and Goliath. Think about, here's this man. Now, I looked this up and did some research before this about Goliath, and I've read a lot of different things about him. And it just depends. I'm not going to go into all the different scholars and what they have to say about it, but most believe he's around 9 feet, okay? It depends on what you read. So imagine being 9 feet tall, and this little ruddy kid comes up, and he's got a bag of rocks and a staff in his hand. Can you imagine? So he scoffs at him. David takes one of those, slings it, embeds it in his forehead, and drops him like a bad habit, just like that. Goes over and takes his sword and cuts his head off with that guy's own sword. Can you imagine that? And then all of a sudden, the Philistines run, and Israel rallies because of this little shepherd boy. One person can make all the difference in the world. They really can. Can they not? Especially when God is on their side and they know that and they believe in God and they believe in themselves. And so I want to look at some lessons very quickly to learn from David. And hopefully there's a lot just from going through the text. But number one, people do not limit us unless we let them. That is a great lesson from David, because that's what you see. His father limited him, his brothers limited him, his kings limited him, and of course his opponents did as well. And so we are only limited when we allow ourselves to be. I'm sure that you've got stories you could tell about this, but back a number of years ago working in Decatur for a civil engineering and surveying outfit, and I had been there several years and had learned a lot of different things. I was trying to learn as much as I possibly could so I could move up in advance. So I had very young kids at the time. I needed to make more money. I needed to advance. I wanted to. So I came up to one of the owners and met with him in his office and asked him, you know, what is my future here? Do you see me later on running a couple of crews, being inspector of this or whatever? And he said, Mark, I'll be honest with you. And he praised me for my work, because I was a hard worker. And he said, Mark, we don't have any openings. I'm sorry. I said, well, thanks for being honest with me. I didn't tell him, but right away I started looking for a job, of course. And so then I got interviewed at Dunnev Engineering. Long story short, he made me an offer. So I go and I put in my 2-week notice there at P. Wright & Associates. I'll never forget this. And so it's at the end of my 2 weeks, and I've got a cup of coffee. We were between jobs. I go up front. And there was a guy there that was at that time probably late 70s. He'd been retired a few years, licensed surveyor. And so he had worked for P. Wright & Associates as a licensed surveyor under them. And then in his retirement, what he was doing was he would gather up deeds and different things and maps that we needed to go out on our different jobs. And that really helped us and took care of a lot of time. Anyway, he was scoffing at me. And he and the owner, one of the owner's boys, were laughing, saying, you got a job where? Man, you'll be back here in no time. You're never going to make it. You're going to, oh, you think you're going to go over there and run their field crews? And they were laughing at me. I know I was beet red. I was so, and I had a temper back then. But that was the boss's boy. I wasn't about to say or do anything, but it made me so mad. And so sometimes we can be limited by other people. He said, you'll be right back. I've never been back there. I've never been back there. My point is, I could let that get to me and say, well, what am I thinking, man? I can't do this. He's probably right, you know. I don't even think I'll leave. A lot of people do that, do they not? Don't let other people limit you. You only limit yourself when you believe what they say. A second thing that we can learn is David's strength, and this would be the main thing, was his God. And so look at the passage there in 17:37. He gives God the credit. I love this because we see so much arrogance in the world today, and everybody wants the spotlight, and they want you to know what they've done and everything. Here is David, and he is a giant killer, you know, and he ends up being a king, and he does all these great things, but he's not saying, hey, look at me, look how great I am. He gives God the credit, which is exactly what we should do in our life. Verse 37, moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. Now, skip down to verse 46, and you see him doing the same thing. Verse 46, this day the Lord will deliver you into my hand. And this is, of course, the Philistine talking to him, or him talking to him. And I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses to the camp of the Philistines, to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, and that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. I love that. So I hope that you benefited from this lesson tonight. I hope maybe this brought something out else out about David that you haven't thought about and some different points. Don't let other people limit you. This is what I want to leave you with. See yourself the way God sees you. We're made in the image of God. That's what we've been talking about on Sunday morning. Made in the image of God. God loves us so much that Christ died for us and he wants to spend eternity with us. The Ephesians 3:20 passage we looked at Wednesday, that we're able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think through the power that works in us, right? We only limit ourselves. See yourself the way that God sees you. Now, when you think about David, what stands out? The one passage in the Bible that stands out that is two different times, once in the old, once in the new, about David. No. Man after God's own heart. We all know that, right? But I want you to think about this. This is the latter part of that that we pretty much always ignore. It says this, who will do all of my will. He's not only, that's the key to being a man or a woman after God's own heart is doing the will of God. Are we doing his will to the very best of our ability? We need help with that, don't we? And that's why we're here, brothers and sisters in Christ. Can we help you with that this evening? If so, let us know, and we're going to sing this song for our encouragement.